It's Jeep 4x4 season. Make your next adventure epic and hurry in now for great deals. And now, well-qualified lessees get a low-mileage lease on the 2023 Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe for $389 a month for 24 months with $5,399 due at signing. Tax, title, license extra. No security deposit required. Call 1-888-925-JEEP for details. Requires dealer contribution, a lease to Chrysler Capital. Extra charge for miles over 20,000. Residency restrictions apply. Take delivery by 5/31/23. Jeep is a registered trademark.
Please stand clear of the doors.
Hey, guys, on the monorail. Alex, you know, we love hearing your history, man. What are we doing the history on coming up?
We're going to do Floyd Norman. It's really inspiring. It almost makes me inspired, but not quite.
Alex, you got to start betting on yourself, man. You got to start.
Really? You think I should do, what should I do? Like a cameo with my voice or something like that?
I would pay at least $3 for a cameo for you to sing happy birthday on my birthday.
I would pay you in tacos.
Tacos? I love tacos.
Bet on yourself, man.
Maybe I will. Maybe I will.
Welcome to episode 195 of the Diz His podcast. I'm Joe.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Chris.
Today we will be giving the his on Floyd Norman. Right now we are recording live for our group troop members. If you want to watch us live once a week, all you got to do is go to DizHis.com and on the very top you will find the link for the group troop. For as low as $2 a month, you can go ahead and join our group troop. You'll be entered into our giveaways. We're actually going to be giving away a wax melt from Three Cheeky Chicks later on today. So stick around for that if you want to hear who the winner is going to be. But yeah, go ahead and support us. It helps us support, like, you know, pay for our website, pay for some advertising, and, you know, it helps us kind of distribute our podcast out on the different platforms. So yeah, go to DizHis.com and support us.
We don't discriminate against the Amish. So if you guys only have a landline, you can give us a call at 707-842-0345. Leave us a message. You won't be able to hear it if you don't believe in the internet, but we, you know, take our word for it. We will read your message live on the show for people to hear.
That's right. We'll read it live, and we also can read emails that you send us at dizhis65@gmail.com. That's dizhis65@gmail.com. And you can send us emails, like I say every week, give us ideas for future episodes, let us know how we're doing, give us some feedback, tell us about your memories, because we want all the memories.
Yeah, we actually got an email. We have an email from one of our Patreon members, Katie. So, hey guys, love the show and have learned so much from listening to you. Here's one of my Disney memories that I wanted to share in case it could be an inspiration for an episode. When I was six in the late 1980s, I had an opportunity to go to Magic Kingdom for 2 days. My great uncle Huey worked in the Disney Underground, his retirement gig, and my mom, dad, brother, and I were able to go through his friends and family passes. Although I was only there for 2 days, I remember it so vividly. I can still sing the Spirit of America theme song to you and still remember the Delta If You Can Fly attraction. I have been to Disney several times in my adult life, but this was the only time I had the opportunity to go as a child. The warmth and wonder of that first experience will stay with me forever. One of my favorite memories is watching the glass blower through the window on Main Street. I was absolutely mesmerized. I haven't seen a glass blower on any other trip to MK. This got me thinking, do they still have glass blowers on Main Street? It might be interesting to take a dive into the history and backstory of the Main Street artists, the glass blowers, the paper cutters, the parasol painters. I still have my custom painted Mary Poppins parasol. Even the barbers, I haven't heard any other Disney podcast cover this specific topic. Also, thanks for the recent membership push. I finally joined Goof Troop, Gabby K, and Discord, and I'm so glad I did, Katie. So yeah, so thanks for reaching out. And I know at Epcot, I've seen glass blowers there at Epcot. I'm not sure if they're at Magic Kingdom anymore, but that would be something cool that we can kind of look into the different shops on Main Street.
That is interesting because we talked about Main Street, but we never talked about the individual shops and more specifically the artists on Main Street, like she was saying. Awesome suggestion because like we keep saying, we're going on our 200th episode. We need to start getting creative here, and that's a pretty creative topic. But just going back to what Katie said in her email, I think everybody has, which is so cool about Disney, I think everybody has that one just early memory of Disney that was just such a magical experience that kind of just like introduced you to the magic of Disney. And what's cool is that we're all adults now and we're still going back to kind of try to keep getting that magic that we experienced when we were little. Really cool memory there.
Yeah. And not only that, I'm pretty sure Alex, Alex, you didn't go to Disney when you were younger.
No, I did not. I went to Disney once as a child. I have a fond memory of it. Even though it rained, it was still fun.
So today we're going to be giving the history on Floyd Norman. Floyd Norman was born in 1935 and grew up loving Disney, eventually achieving his dream by working for Walt Disney Studios as an animator. Floyd Norman became the first long-term African-American artist at the studio. He worked on several Disney classics and was introduced into the Disney Hall of Fame. So, you know, we're going to be celebrating, recognizing Black History Month. So we wanted to kind of, you know, talk about Floyd Norman. Mm-hmm. Alex, you know, you wrote the history for this. What do you, before we kind of get into the history, is there anything that really kind of caught your eye that you're kind of looking forward to kind of talking about?
I think his real life story is kind of interesting. And then just all the kind of things that he had his hand in is kind of cool. Like, he has hand in two of the movies that I know. One of them is Chris's favorite and one is kind of my Ooh. Favorite. And if you listen to his, you might know what movie I'm already talking about, what animated movie. But he also had a life outside of Disney. So he did more than just Disney stuff. He left Disney for a little bit and then he came back. And then while he worked at Disney, after Disney for a little bit, he left again and then came back again. And he's still a Disney legend. Even after taking, you know, some years to go do other things, he still had so much of an impact that he's still a Disney legend, which is interesting.
I think doing the history on any prominent employee of Disney that worked on stuff that we all grew up with, that we all love, whether it be an Imagineer, an animator, a composer, is always really fascinating. The fact that this guy was the first African-American long-term animator for Disney just makes it a little more special. So I'm really excited to hear how he got to where he is and all the stuff that he got into.
Mm-hmm.
Trust in me. Hold still, please. You can sleep safe and sound, knowing I am around.
Let's get to the his on Floyd Norman.
Sail on a silver mist. Slowly and surely your senses will cease to resist. Trust in me and just in me.
Floyd Norman was born on June 22nd, 1935 in Santa Barbara, California. His love for Disney started when he saw Dumbo and Bambi as a child. His grandmother told him he could recognize Walt's signature on books and comics before he could read. He grew up reading Mickey Mouse comic books, reading stacks of them during Sunday afternoons, and knew one day he wanted to work for Walt at Disney Studios. Walt's grandmother was his biggest supporter. During the 40s, parents barely knew what an animator was, let alone how someone could make a living doing it. Floyd's grandmother always encouraged him to chase his dream, and when he was in high school, he took a ride to Disney Studios, but found they were closed. He managed to talk to a security guard who allowed him to enter the gates of Disney Studio and walk down to Animation Building. He was able to talk to some of the Disney artists who told him to go to art school. Norman did just that. After high school, he attended the Art Center College of Design in Pasadena, California, where he majored in illustration. Once he graduated, he worked as an assistant to Katie Keene comic book artist Bill Waugan in Santa Barbara. He returned to Disney a few years later, in 1957, to apply for a position, just as Disney was expanding. At this time, Floyd's grandmother was dying of cancer, and the same weekend he was hired, he was able to go to his grandmother's bedside and tell her he got the job at Disney. That same weekend, she passed away. Norman started as an in-betweener and animator on the now classic Sleeping Beauty. Floyd worked at Disney for a bit, becoming the first African-American artist to remain at the studio for a long-term basis, before he was drafted to fight in World War II. Norman returned from the war and went back to work for Disney, working on 101 Dalmatians and The Sword in the Stone.
I think it's must have been a pretty cool time to be there, kind of like when it almost all started, right? Like, do you think when it all started, do you think that they kind of visioned where it would be where it is today?
No way. No. I mean, maybe
do you think Walt
envisioned something that is no one else could envision. And, but, you know, that was his gift, right? His gift was being able to think of an idea that was so preposterous, everyone else would be like, no way is that going to be possible, and then make it happen. But I think the people there were just like, I'm happy to be doing what I love doing as a job and actually get paid to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really cool. I mean, sad that his grandmother passed away, but it was really cool that he was able to tell her that he got the job at Disney before she passed. I feel like that's something he'll remember forever, and just such a cool story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, imagine how sad that would be if she passed and then he got his dream job.
Yeah.
Like, it's cool that he can probably find some peace in the fact that she was able to share that moment with him, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, because I mean, like the history says, think of a time during that time when a young African American was like, I want to be an animator when I grow up. His parents were like, what? No, that's, but his grandma believed in him, and he continued to try to do what he wanted to do despite all the, you know, the history. I don't have a lot of the individual hurdles he took to get where he wanted to be, because there wasn't really, I didn't find that anywhere, which I think mm-hmm. is fine, because him just achieving his goal is amazing by itself. Despite anything else, he was able to have a dream as a child and achieve it as an adult, which is, no matter who you are or where you come from, that in itself is an amazing feat.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think it's cool he worked on Sword in the Stone. I mean, I think that's a really good underrated movie. I would love to do history on Sword of the Stone. So I think it's kind of cool he got to work on that classic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, imagine your first movie being an amazing classic like the one he's working on. I mean, at the time, of course, you don't know it's a classic till it's a classic. But
sure, yeah.
For that to be the first thing you work on for Disney is and then, you know, move on to Sword in the Stone as well. It's he was set up for success, I guess you can say. But good on him for continuing to try to get where he needed to be. And thankfully, he came over to Disney at the time it was growing, and they were able to, you know, hire him. And also thankfully, he was able to go to World War II and come back and retain retain working in the field and stuff. I couldn't find any information about what he did in World War II. I have no idea what he was doing during that time, but
he's owning some noobs.
Yeah, he was owning some noobs. Maybe he was working in as an animator for the, you know, because they didn't have animators making cartoons and stuff.
Like, yeah, for World War II, right?
Yeah. That would have been interesting.
But I did, like I said, I even Googled it. I could not find anything about what he did in World War II, which makes me believe that maybe he was just a normal military person. And thankfully, he was able to make it out alive and come back in one piece and continue his career. Floyd Norman loved working at Disney and would make fun sketches of his coworkers as a way to lighten the mood and get through the week. One night, Walt came into the animation building after hours, as he did, and looked around seeing a bunch of sketches all over the office. The next morning, Andy Ingman, Floyd's boss, called him into his office. Ingman told Floyd to pack up his stuff. He was moving upstairs to the C-Wing, the story department. Floyd thought he was going up there to work as an assistant, but upon arrival, Larry Clemens gave him his sequence for The Jungle Book. Floyd did his best, like everyone else, but during the first meeting with Walt, he told everyone he didn't like the story and said he wanted some good stuff. Floyd knew what Walt wanted. He had been reading and watching Disney since he was a child. Norman channeled that inner child as he drew up the new gags for the Trust in Me sequence with Mowgli and Ka. The next meeting with Walt, he looked at the boards and said, that's more like it. After Walt's death in 1966, Floyd decided to leave Disney Studios to co-found Vinette Films with fellow African-American animator friend Leo D. Sullivan. Vinette Films had a rough start. At one point, they were evicted from their office building and had to use one of the local coffee shops. Floyd and Leo gave all their contacts the phone number to the shop, so whenever the phone would ring, one of them would have to stop and run over to answer the phone. Hello, Vinette Films Incorporated. They managed to produce 6 animated films, making them the first company to produce films that focus on Black history. They also worked on segments for Sesame Street and the original Hey, 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 It's Fat Albert, which aired in 1969 on NBC. Unfortunately, Vinette Films couldn't make it, and Floyd was lucky enough to be able to return to Disney, just in time to work on Robin Hood. After working for Disney for a bit, he again left, but this time to work at Hanna-Barbera Productions. He worked there for 7 years as a layout artist on Wheelie and the Chopper Bunch and The Quickie Koala Show, an animator on Jabberjaw, and a layout artist and character designer for the new Fred and Barney show. In 1980, Floyd returned to Walt Disney Studios to become the writer for the Mickey Mouse comic strip until it was discontinued.
Hey, so, you know, we talked about Walt before, how the animators used to go into the studio and they were kind of look at the ashtrays to see where Walt was around the most, like which station he was around the most, right? So whichever ashtray had most of the ashes and cigarettes, they knew that's where Walt was, and he was like interested in what was going on there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and one of the things I didn't really think about at the time when we were talking about that is that he doesn't know who's there.
No,
like he doesn't know if it's a white guy, a black guy, you know, an alien, female. He doesn't know who is at that particular station. And I didn't really think about that now until we're talking about this, you know. And then I think it's cool that he was there. He's like, I like what's going on here. Let's call him up. So I think that's kind of a cool part of his story.
Yeah, I think, well, Walt was a very open-minded guy. I don't think it mattered who it was, even if he knew. But I think, yeah, he would go in and he would just blindly look at people's stuff and decide, like, I like this, I like that. And it's so funny that he was like, hey, who's doing all this? Who's doing all this little stuff around the office? Like, oh man, is he gonna get in trouble? Nope, he's gonna get promotion. Like, that's just amazing how that works. He's like, I see talent and I'm gonna promote you. And he didn't get promoted the way he thought he got promoted. He got promoted right to where he thought he didn't expect to be. He got bumped up quite a bit, and immediately got to work on one of the movies that Chris loves and I love. There, and I'm so glad that he was a part of it because that movie is amazing.
Yeah, so I want to talk about that a little bit, about The Jungle Book, my favorite movie. So, yeah, this guy is an animator, right?
Yes.
But it seems like he's just way more talented than being able to draw. Like, he's right. A storyteller, too.
Mm-hmm.
That scene, Trusted Me, with Mowgli and Ka is an amazing scene. Like, that's one of the scenes I always thought of when I was little. I'd always look forward to that. Him walking up the steps of the snake, like the snake just going all over the eyes of, mm-hmm. of Mowgli getting hypnotized. Just an awesome, awesome scene. So the fact that he was behind that. And then he went on to write for Mickey Mouse comic strip. Doesn't say, you know, draw. He wrote the stories. So it seemed like he was an awesome storyteller. So he was just talented across the board. And loved the fact that he could just come back to Disney anytime he wanted to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Leave and then just, and then they'd hire him back because he was just that talented. And it seems like he had the respect of everybody there too.
Right, exactly. No, he has just, he was well liked, you know.
Yeah,
you can't just leave and come back if you're not well liked. So obviously not only was he talented in the field, but also he was probably a great person.
Yeah, and talk about a dreamer. You know, we talked about in the beginning of the episode about how it was just not common for an African-American to be able to have a job where he applied to Disney as an animator. Like, mm-hmm. that was just like crazy for, but he, you know, he dreamed that he could do it and he did it. Then not only, you know, he was against all odds, he was able to get that job. Then he leaves and starts his own business. Another insane thing that worked out for a little bit. And, it was just cool that he just continued to, it seemed like he never settled. He always just, was looking to, in the words of Walt, plus himself, just continue to improve, continue to make an impact wherever that may be. It was really, really cool to see all this.
Every time we read history and on people specifically, and they bet on themselves, it's kind of something I can never do because I can never bet on myself. Like, how could he leave, you know, such a nice job to bet on himself? Unfortunately, it didn't work out for him. I mean, it did work out in the sense that he got some stuff made that he wanted he was passionate about.
Yeah, long term.
Right. But overall, the business itself didn't work out. But that probably helped him actually in his career because that gave him time to develop certain skills he may not have developed yet. And it was funny because when I was reading the history, there's some stuff I didn't add in the history. But when they got evicted, they had all their equipment, like their pens, paper, all this stuff for drawing was in a cupboard inside the building and they were locked out. And him and his friend Leo, they broke in order just to steal pens, papers, and stuff, their materials, which they're like doing it. They're like, really? We broke in here just to steal pens, papers, and like that's things you could go buy, but like they needed it for their work. So it's kind of funny that they set up shop in a coffee shop. Like it's literally the fake it till you make it kind of mentality.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So I almost didn't add the history for the for his segment at Hanna-Barbera, but I thought it was important to know where he went after Disney and working on shows I've heard of, like Jabba Jaw and the new Fred and Barney show.
About Fat Albert.
Yeah.
Yeah, Fat original, Albert too.
And this is the original Fat Albert. I guess it said the original because I guess there's another Fat Albert that came out shortly after that was actually the one that became popular. This one was a very short-lived one that was prior to the actual Fat Albert show.
Speaking about just like Black history a little bit, because Fat Albert was he worked on a lot of just things that promoted Black culture. Did we do the history on Jungle Book? We did, right?
Jungle Book, I believe.
I can take a look.
I think so.
I think we did. I'm because I don't think we talked about this a lot, but since it's Black History Month and we're focusing on Black history, I was just wondering if now that we know that there was an African-American animator.
Right.
I wonder if Jungle Book kind of broke barriers, because if you look at the movie, they had that whole doo-wop scene with King Louie.
Yep.
Which was very, you know, influenced by Black culture.
Right.
You have a Black animator. I wonder if I don't know. I wonder if that broke any barriers. That was in the 50s. '60s. It came out, correct?
Yeah, I believe so.
Was it like 1966? The Jungle Book.
Yeah, 1967. Because we did do the history on Jungle Book 1967, but we didn't do it on the newer one, I guess.
Right. So yeah, I'm wondering, because 67, there was still a lot of tension. Segregation was still around. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean,
yeah.
It was just a lot of racism going on. So I don't know. I wonder if that was a film that kind of broke barriers a little bit. Be interesting to kind of dive into that history. It's cool because look, we did the history on the Jungle Book, but never would we think about that there was a history like this behind it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like we're looking at the, you know, how it's made and this and that. We know, but now doing the history on Floyd Norman, who worked on the film, now you got to wonder if, you know, was there any other African-American animators? Was there, you know, who else had their hand in this?
Mm-hmm.
And who directed, was the director of this movie trying to kind of break down walls by putting this movie out? It's pretty cool because you watch the movie. It's a silly movie about a kid who's raised by wolves. You know what I mean? And lives in the jungle. But it's really cool that there's a way bigger meaning behind the creation of the movie and maybe influence of the movie. It's kind of cool when you piece all these things together.
Yeah, I agree. I agree for sure. Floyd Norman continued to work for Disney, eventually working at Pixar as well. He worked on Hunchback of Notre Dame, Mulan, Dinosaur, Toy Story 2, and Monsters, Inc. He also worked on movies for other studios like Freebird by RealFX. In 2007, Floyd was inducted into the Disney Hall of Fame with the Disney Legend Award. He has been honored with many other awards, like the Winsor McKay Award in 2002, Special Achievement Award from the African American Film Critics Association in 2016, and was even awarded with an honorary doctorate of philosophy degree from Cogswell Polytechnical College in 2018. Floyd has always been passionate about educating people about Black history and equality. He wrote a column for JimHillMedia.com and AfroKids.com. In 2016, Norman was appointed to the Education and Outreach Committee of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. Norman has also published several books of cartoons that were inspired by his life in the animation industry. His picture book, A Kiss Goodnight, debuted at 2017 D23 Expo. He wrote a semi-autobiography titled Animated Life, A Lifetime of Tips, Tricks, Techniques, and Stories from an Animation Legend. The novel was published by Focal Press in 2013. In 2016, he was the subject of a documentary titled Floyd Norman, An Animated Life.
I think it's so funny that the documentary was like, let's take your title for your semi-autobiography and make it like a quarter shorter. Like his semi-autobiography title was so long.
So long.
It was so long. And they're like, yeah, I think just Animated Life is perfect. Like you don't have to do all this other stuff. But, you know, another thing is you're writing a book by yourself and you're willing to put in the title Animation Legend. It's kind of ballsy.
I know. I thought the same thing. And no one's going to question it. You look at his resume.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at his resume. Oh, Animation Legend. Let me see what this guy worked on. Oh, Sleeping Beauty, Jungle Book. Oh.
Toy Story 2.
Mulan. Hunchback. Notre Dame.
You know, Mulan.
Dinosaur. Yeah, it's like and? No, sir. Sir, you are. You are.
How many years did he work for Disney? Like half his life?
Yeah, a lot. And then he's still to this, I think I read somewhere that he's a consultant to his stuff as well. So they have a lot of people who they consult with.
Oh, and he worked on Mary Poppins.
Oh, I didn't see that.
I assume it was the penguins?
Right. Yeah, it would have to be because of the animation part.
It could be wrong. But I don't know. We'll just say he did.
I think it's, you know, last week we did history on the airmen, the Tuskegee, how do you say it? Tuskegee Airmen?
Tuskegee
Airmen, right?
Okay. Yep.
We're doing it on Floyd Norman this week. How crazy is it that they started in a time where, you know, it was just such a different time. And now look where they're at. Now look how the times have changed, right? And now he's working on all, not only has it changed, like, this, you know, how our views on society, right? But not only that, the technology has changed so much. Now Pixar, can you imagine working on Sleeping Beauty and the technology they had for Sleeping Beauty? Now we have all the technology with computers, you know, with Toy Story 2 and Pixar and Apple, you know, and all these, all these cool types of new technology that they have. Just to see that growth in the amount of time it's totally different, right? Just think about how totally different it was like 30 years ago when I was growing up and we were, you know, we didn't have like iPhones. Like iPhones are really, when did the iPhone come out? Like 2000s and early 2000s, maybe late 2000s.
Yeah, it was like 2000.
Look how much time technology has changed in this short amount of time. Mm-hmm. Just to see that growth in your lifetime is just unbelievable, I feel like.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So he was the assistant animator on Mary Poppins.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I can't even miss that one. But yeah, that's amazing.
That's literally the only thing you missed. Like his whole resume is everything that you said. The only thing that you didn't bring up was the Mary Poppins. He worked on so as an assistant animator on Mary Poppins, he worked on the Pearly Band.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, all this is awesome, and I love that he's able to, you know, do all this Disney stuff while simultaneously doing his own thing. Really shows you how great they are at Disney allowing people to do their own projects. Because when they're successful, Disney's successful, you know? You can't stunt a creator's growth. And if they can't, you know, do it at Disney, they're allowing you to take your personal time. It's your personal time. You could do whatever you want in personal time to do something different. Because some businesses will be like, no, you can't work on that thing that's like us outside of work. Right. Like you work for us. But Disney's like, no, do whatever you want to do outside of the job here to do whatever you want. And I think that's
how
awesome.
Big Disney is. That's how big Disney is. So it's like, we don't even care. Like, whatever.
Like, what are you going to do? You going to be bigger than Disney?
Yeah.
you'll be back.
You'll be back like in Hamilton.
Quick fire, quick facts.
Let's go.
In 2008, Floyd appeared as a guest of honor at Comic-Con International, where he received the Inkpot Award.
In 2013, he was given the Sergio Award from the Comic Artists Professional Society.
In 2014, he was rewarded with the Fritz Freleng Award for Lifetime Achievement for Excellence in Animation from the International Family Film Festival.
In 2019, the National Cartoonist Society gave him the Milton Caniff Lifetime Achievement Award. I'll tell you what.
Go ahead.
Unless you're an animator, the Inkpot Award sounds like an insult.
Yeah, a little bit. I bet you he has a cabinet full of awards at his house.
Oh, yeah.
He has awards on awards on awards on plaques, on doctorates. How, you know, he got a honorary philosophy degree. How do you feel if you get that? Do you think you can call yourself, you can start calling yourself a doctor if you get an honorary doctorate degree?
I don't think
so. I would. I got it, I would. Oh, 100%.
If someone's like, 100%. Chris's achievement in transportation, he now gets a doctorate in,
I'd be one of those people that if they said Mr. Yob, I wouldn't look towards them. at all until they said Dr. Yob. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were talking to me.
How old is he?
How old is who?
Floyd?
Yeah.
87. Do me a favor. If you haven't looked this guy up, look him up. He's not look 87.
Good, man. No, he's not 87.
He could take Dick Van Dyke with one arm behind his back.
Oh, 100%.
One arm behind his back.
So we didn't talk about on the
I know. The I know podcast, exactly what you're going to say.
Dick Van Dyke was on Masked Singer.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, we were just talking about him on This Is. It was amazing.
And he looks horrible. I couldn't wait for him to put the mask back on.
No, he looked terrifying. Great. All the people were crying. And There's no way he was supposed to be on more than one episode. They had him there just for that one episode, just to go home that one episode.
Oh, yeah.
Because his suit was like a shell of a suit. It wasn't even compact on his body. It was like he was standing inside something that was just stationary.
We here at Diz's think Floyd Norman was an amazing inspiration to all kids who have big dreams as a child. Not only did he achieve his dreams, but much more. It is a great story for the African-American community, as well as anyone else who may need motivation.
Light up your magic with Disney-scented candles from Three Cheeky Chicks.
Their candles capture the essence of your favorite Disney resorts and food, from the fresh smell of the Wilderness Lodge to the delicious smell of Ohana bread pudding.
Each candle is hand-poured with the finest ingredients and crafted to perfection, making them the perfect addition to any Disney's fans collection.
Whether you're looking to create a cozy atmosphere in your home or give a unique and magical gift, their candles are sure to bring a touch of Disney magic to your life.
So why wait? Light up your world with Three Cheeky Chicks Disney candles today. Use promo code DizHiz20.
Visit magicallyscented.com and use promo code DizHiz20.
Hey guys, want to hear something cool? Do you want to be part of the Goof Troop? Our Goof Troop is the best, and a way to help support the show. You get access to our wonderful giveaways, Discord chat, and you can join for only $2 a month. In our Discord chat, you can interact with the hosts and some of our great members. There are Disney-themed games in our chat, streams from the park, we have a special Spotify playlist. Overall, we just have a lot of fun. You also get access to our live shows, which can sometimes be a little crazy. Once again, help support the show for as low as $2 a month and join the Goof Troop. Just go to DizHiz.com and on top, there's a link. Check us out streaming on award-winning Disney streaming site Sorcerer Radio on Fridays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, or catch us again at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Sorcerer Radio is an amazing 24/7 Disney radio. Just visit srsounds.com or download the Sorcerer Radio app.
Hey, I'm Joe from the Diz Hiz.
And I'm Nick from Sandpiper Vacations.
We will be teaming up to give one of the best travel experiences ever.
I am a travel agent with Sandpiper Vacations. We are able to book any vacation destination around the world, including Disney, cruises, and all-inclusive resorts.
We have been working here at the Diz Hiz to become travel agents. And with our knowledge of the parks, we want to plan the best Disney trip for you.
Using us as a travel agent, we are updated on the latest and greatest information about all of the destinations. We can help save you time, stress, and sometimes some money. Using our services costs you absolutely nothing. It is completely free to you, and we are happy to assist you with giving you more value for your trip.
So if you're looking to book your next Disney trip, go to DizHiz.com. Check out DizHiz Destinations on the very top.
Check us out on Weeby Geeks, a new podcast website where you can find all your favorite geeky content. Just head over to WeebyGeeksPC.com. That's WeebyGeeksPC.com. And listen to all the other awesome podcasts, as well as Diz Hiz.
Diz Hiz, Diz Hiz, review.
Review.
So this week for D Plus, we have Mary Poppins Returns. You know, we did a couple weeks ago, we did Mary Poppins, the original. Then we did Saving Mr. Banks, and now we're doing Mary Poppins Returns, and I like Mary Poppins Returns. I think they did a good job with it. I actually got to watch it on the cruise, one of the cruise boats, but I think it's a good movie. I love the songs in it. I mean, whenever you have Lin-Manuel Miranda and he's rapping, I'm all in. That was probably one of my favorite parts of the movie, is when he, they were like in a theater and he came out and they sang. But I think it's a good movie. Alex, what do you think of it?
I think it was all right. Like I said before, I wasn't a giant Mary Poppins fan until recently, and I didn't really care when this came out that much. And I thought it was all right. It was good. It was interesting. I don't know if it was necessary, but they were riding that Mary Poppins high from having the other movie come out that we were just talking about. Mr. Banks. And I think... they're not going to make another one of these, I imagine. I don't think it did well enough, but it was all right. Of course, they added Lin-Manuel Miranda in there because they're like, let's put him in there. He's good. He'll make any movie good. And Emily Blunt did good. She did pretty well
yeah.
for playing a Julie Andrews type character. And then I love that Dick Van Dyke was in it.
Yep, just for that little scene at the end.
He was Mr. Dawes Jr., which I thought was awesome that he played. He didn't have any connection to himself. He was connected to his family, I think, right? Yeah.
And, you know, like now people in chat are starting to type like some of the songs that were in it, like Trip, A Little Light Fantastic, you know, a good song, The Bathtub, whatever song that when they were in the bathtub is a really good song. Whatever. If there's like a movie about using your imagination, you know, you have these kids and they're like in a bathtub or whatever. And then before you know it, they're like underneath the water and there's like a whole scene about the ocean. I think that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I like the scene with the bikes. You know what scene I'm talking about?
I really don't remember this movie that much at all, honestly.
And they're doing like jumps and stuff like that. I think that part's super cool. Dude, you don't know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't remember the movie at all. You know, I wasn't too interested in this, but it did gross $172 million in the United States and Canada. And
well, $177 million
in other territories. So, I mean, $349 million worldwide gross with a budget of $130 million. So they definitely made their money back. You know, it definitely was listed financially as a success, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if you put Mary Poppins on it, it's going to be successful, right?
Right.
I mean, not only after this movie, that's when they announced the area at Epcot that was supposed to be Mary Poppins. That's not there yet, right. You know. But right after this movie, they did announce that part. You know, Meryl Streep's in it. She has a good part in the movie. I think her song that she kind of sings is really good. There's some really good songs in it. I think that this is one of those movies where right now we're like, I can tell you I enjoyed it better the second time. I thought the first time was really good, but I enjoyed it better the second time.
It's crazy to make a sequel of a movie over 50 years later.
It is. It is. But, I mean, it's just one of those movies that's iconic, right? So that's why I would love to see a live action of Sword in the Stone. Like, why is that not even a thing? Like, why is the Sword in the Stone not like a live action out?
I think it'd be kind of bold to do. I think they're probably have cold feet on doing a movie that's not very popular. Like, would it be cool? Sure. And maybe they'll do it for like Disney Plus. But I feel like that's one of those huge risks. That because, like, listen, if you're going to remake like The Little Mermaid, people are sprinting to the theaters to see Little Mermaid, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sword in the Stone, it's like, maybe I'll just wait for it to get put on Disney Plus type thing, you know?
Well, Ryan's saying that they're remaking it in chat.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. And it'll be interesting to know what other movies that are 50 years plus they might be making sequels for, because people love the recreation of something, but even better than just taking the same old movie and remaking it, making a sequel like they did for Mary Poppins Returns is kind of a good idea. And since this was successful, maybe that gave Disney the green light to make more sequels, quote unquote sequels, instead of just remaking the first movie over again, just fresher.
I'm a big fan of the whole sequels a long time after, and done the right way, it can be super successful. I mean, Finding Dory was, I mean, it's not 50 years. That was pretty long after Incredibles 2. The Incredibles 2 is another one.
That was a good amount of time.
Very long
time. The first and second one, for sure. And that
felt
was very
like 50
successful.
Years. Yeah. And it's cool, instead of rebooting these movies, to do a continuation, especially because you get a fresh take with familiar characters. I think that's the coolest part.
Yeah.
Hey, this is AJ for the D Plus Club, where we cover all things Disney Plus. Each week, I bring you the latest news and rumors, as well as what's new and what's coming soon to the Disney streaming service in the US and in the UK. And each week, we have a weekly movie club, where between February 27th and March 5th, we'll be returning to our MCU series for Avengers Endgame. Share your thoughts in the weekly movie club room in the Sorcerer Radio Discord at srsounds.com/Discord, and I'll feature some of your comments in this week's podcast. You can find the D Plus Club on all major podcasting platforms, including the Sorcerer Radio website, srsounds.com/the D Plus Club, with new episodes every Sunday. See you there.
Giveaway, giveaway, giveaway now. Giveaway, giveaway, giveaway now. Giveaway, giveaway, giveaway now. Which wax melt do you want us to send you?
All right. So we do have a mixture of the, we have a diverse set of leprechauns here.
We have Alex right there on the front.
We have Irish leprechauns, we have Latino leprechauns, and we have African-American leprechauns. Which leprechaun will win? 3, 2, 1.5, go.
Oh, they're falling apart.
Gold. Oh, yeah. We got a purple one, too.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, look at that's go. The alien I was talking about earlier. It's
Benji. Terrifying to look at.
We got Benji up front. New Ryan.
All right. Wow, this is like really close. This is, I think, the closest race I've ever seen before.
Oh, wow. That's a big shift right there.
I'm listening to the Irish music playing, so I can't even hear you guys.
Samantha. Tara.
Oh, who's this guy? Who's this guy creeping up at the bottom?
Oh, it's Maddie.
Maddie? Oh, top Tara.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, Emily. Amelia.
She's going to win.
Oh, my God.
Congratulations.
Back of nowhere.
Wow. Look at how all the leprechauns just bow to the winner.
What's the most you can have on here?
100.
You know what's funny is like it's always someone who comes from behind that was off screen. Like that's always, how it always is. It's never
like you don't want to be winning.
So, Alex, what did you do this week in Disney?
So, did not do a lot in Disney. You know, I did the history, which is Disney. I'm finding things out about Disney every week. Did not do too much in the fact of just watching stuff. Did I tell you guys I finished Wakanda Forever?
Dude, I finished it too. I watched.
Okay, so
let's talk about it.
Last episode, did not finish it. This episode, I did finish Wakanda Forever, and I said that the rest of the movie probably wouldn't be as good as I thought, and it was not going to be as good as I thought. And you know, I don't think it was that amazing of a movie. I think the back half was better than the first half, for sure.
Yes.
I like the interactions. The fighting was interesting. I love how much M'Baku's in it. He's like one of my favorite characters now.
Yeah.
He is great. He is awesome.
Winston Duke.
And I thought it was interesting. There's a lot of things I disliked about it, but then there were some things I liked. I like the very ending with the reveal of a certain person. I'm not going to say it to ruin anyone's thing, but I think the location fights were okay. How they were fighting, how they were trying to defeat somebody was interesting. But I overall was kind of let down from it. I don't think it was that great of a movie. And I think it's going to hurt the franchise of the Wakanda films, I think. I don't know.
You think so?
I'm not interested to see Wakanda anymore. I've seen enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've definitely seen enough of Wakanda. I don't need to go back there anymore. A lot happened in Wakanda, this movie. And I'm you know, Wakanda tech is cool. I'm perfectly fine with seeing it other places. My biggest problem with the movie is nothing mattered. But like the whole conflict.
Right.
Like it was an internal conflict to begin with, but the way it was resolved and everything, it was just nothing mattered. Like
right.
Moving this what do you mean this didn't matter. Like, what do you mean?
Like nothing was changed due to the result of the final battle. It was just kind of put off to the side to be to reignite later.
Yeah, like it was like the whole thing could have happened, and it could have been like a 3-minute like story that they told in a film, and it would have been like it just wasn't. Nothing was like. I mean, there were some things that happened that were big events, but nothing that changes anything moving forward, really.
What'd you think,
I guess,
Joe?
I guess, and you know what? Maybe I'm just realizing this. Maybe it's because like we knew T'Challa was gonna die, and that was like the big thing that happened in the first 30 seconds of this movie.
You're right.
That was like the big thing of this movie was his death and dealing with his death and everything. So maybe it's because we knew that already. I don't know.
I thought it was okay. You know, I was playing basketball this past week, and I was talking with one of my friends, and, you know, I was just kind of like, I don't understand what people want from, like, these movies. Like, they're not going to be award-winning movies. Not every movie is going to be Endgame. I thought it was a good story. Like, I think it was slow at times, you know, right? But I thought it was a good story. I feel like the story of Namor, how you say his, am I saying his name?
Yeah,
right?
Namor. Yeah.
Like, I think his story was kind of cool, right?
Yeah, so he was great. Character. Yeah.
And we don't know for sure if this is not going to play a bigger part in the film. Because what happens, because they're kind of allied together, almost in a way, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't know for sure.
Not officially.
But they are kind of.
They just kind of squashed their beef.
Right.
Well, they made a pact at the end.
No, they're not even that strong either. Like, take away the water, what are they? They're just people that need water every, like, couple hours.
Sure, and I feel like, you know, global warming, they're in trouble. It's so hot out. As soon as they leave the water, they're going to freaking be like in that ship. You know, it's going to dry out. They're in trouble everywhere. Yeah. You know?
I liked the movie. I didn't love the movie.
Yeah, I thought it was okay.
It was fun. It was a fun watch.
I don't think it was fun.
No, and I think that's what Ant-Man's going to be like. Chris, I think we kind of talked about your review of Ant-Man like in our Discord chat.
We didn't talk about that. I just realized. Alex, is that all you did in this week in Disney?
I wanted to say before we move on from the movie that one of the only things that kept me interested was the reveal of Atuma, who I would not know of unless it was for Marvel Snap.
Yeah.
So a Marvel Snap thus helped me get through the last half of the film because I was like, what are they gonna do with this with Atuma? Oh my god, that's Atuma. Oh my gosh, I love Atuma. I know
Marvel
nothing
Snap
about
a good
him,
job but at giving those lesser characters actual interest.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, Atuma, I can't wait to see what he does. he does nothing. I thought that was kind of funny. I had subtitles on because I watch it at night, my wife's sleeping. And the only reason I knew it was Atuma is because it came up on subtitles. I was like, oh, that's Atuma? Oh, my gosh.
That's right. Same thing happened to me, too, man. I was like, oh, Marvel Snap. That's how I know.
I would have never known that was him.
And then I immediately started playing Marvel Snap with my Atuma build, my Atuma deck.
And you probably lost every match because he sucked.
No, I love my Atuma deck.
So we're going to talk about Ant-Man?
Go ahead.
Yeah, so real quick, what I did this week in Disney. First, I just want to talk about this real quick. I made a little Lego set. It was $10. It was... Boba Fett and his starship.
Oh, you did?
And it took me like 20 minutes to build. And it was a really fun little build. I have it here somewhere on my desk. I thought, oh yeah, here it is. I'll hold up the camera for the patrons to see. It's a really small little thing. Boba Fett sits inside and it's a really nice little like desk Lego set. So I highly recommend getting that if you like building things but can't afford the expensive sets. $10. It was a fun little build and very detailed. Lego does an awesome job. It's a fun little, little afternoon thing to do. I'm going to send this in Discord right now. I also bought a 100th Disney 100th anniversary Funko Pop. I went to Target because they have an exclusive Daffy Duck one and I couldn't find it, but Emily actually found this. So I bought this. It's Oswald the Lucky Rabbit.
Nice.
And it has the Disney 100 all over it.
That's cool.
Very, very nice packaging. They're doing a really nice job with presenting that stuff. There's only one there, Ryan. Ryan just said Discord. Thanks for getting me one. They had nothing. My Target is embarrassing to go in. Everything's all over the place. We found this in the clothing section. So just laying on a pile of clothes that was on the ground. So anyway, could have gave me that one, he says. Not going to talk about Ant-Man a whole lot. It just came out. Not going to give a lot of spoilers. I thought it was a fun movie, but not great movie. It was fun to watch. CGI was really bad. Ugh. And I was not alone in thinking that. Everybody that I went with, Emily, my friend and his fiance, and then my other friend, we all were not blown away by the movie. We're all pretty disappointed by it. The CGI, like I said, was not great. I just read an article today saying that a lot of the CGI team for Marvel were taken from Ant-Man and put on Wakanda Forever.
Really?
So it was hard for them to meet deadlines. They did not have the resources that they are used to. And that showed, especially in MODOK's face without the mask on. It's it's embarrassing.
Really?
It's really bad. It's really bad. And when you watch the movie, you'll see, but there's pictures floating around on the internet and everyone's like, what's going on? Like, what happened? Kang is awesome. Jonathan Majors, amazing performance. And that's what really saved this movie. That and the combination of just Paul Rudd being the most entertaining person ever when he's on the screen. He's just great. You know, Ant-Man is the perfect role for him. And he does an awesome job as Ant-Man. But there was just a lot of flaws in the movie. The movie takes place in the quantum realm, and I don't really care about the quantum realm. I really don't. I don't care about the people who live there. It doesn't do anything for me. So the conflict that's going on in the quantum realm, it's like, hey, I really don't care about this. Feels very Star Warsy. One of the pros, I did like that. Bill Murray has a cameo in the movie. He's Bill Murray, so that was cool. Wasp is horrible. I don't like Wasp. And Cassie Lang, Scott yeah. Lang's daughter sucks. She's horrible. they recast her and they
oh they did
and they shouldn't have. They should have. She was just bad. She's not a very good actress. The only like she can be happy, but she can't be like angry or sad. Like she just can't show like that sort of emotion. It's weird. She was a very weak point in the movie. Michelle Pfeiffer, I didn't love in the movie either, which is weird to say because Michelle Pfeiffer is a great actress, but I don't know, just her connection to the quantum realm, I just didn't care about it. And I think that's why it wasn't like her as an actress that I didn't care about. It was just her character. It's like her connection to the quantum realm. And I think it's just because I just really don't care about the quantum realm. Other than the fact that it was important in Endgame, right?
Yeah.
That was cool. That whole fascination.
That's how he got saved.
I like how time moves different and that. I don't care about what goes on down there. Mm-hmm. We're never going to see it again. Like we will never see it again. You know, or we shouldn't see it again anyway. There's just no reason. There's no reason to. And even Paul Rudd said, "I don't think people care about the quantum realm." Like that's a Paul Rudd quote. So I'm not alone. Paul Rudd doesn't even care about the quantum realm. It's a fun movie. Obviously, go and see it. The best part of the movie is the second after credit scene.
Oh,
and so there's two after credit scenes. The first one is cool, but the second one's really cool. That's what I have to say about it. So I think I'm going to start a website. One sentence movie reviews. My one sentence movie review on Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania. Fun, but not great.
I think that's reasonable.
I actually still cannot wait to watch it.
Oh, I couldn't wait to see it either.
You said and you'll, here,
and
I'm
you'll
still
enjoy
looking
it.
Forward to seeing it, even though I probably won't see it for another 3 months because that's how long it took for Black Panther to come out, for Wakanda Forever to come out on D+. I'm still looking forward to seeing it.
It's not a bad movie by any means. It's just
you said
not
a whole
great.
Bunch of bad things about it.
Sure, because I'm ripping it to pieces because I'm disappointed. it's a solid 6 out of 10, 6.2 out of 10 probably. So it's not like bad. It's not bad. I mean, I graduated college getting grades like that. So it's not bad. I have a degree on my wall. But it's just not, like I thought it was going to be amazing. It looked like I had potential to be amazing, especially introducing this new big bad of Marvel. And it was just okay.
See, that's the difference. I'm not going to expect any Marvel movies to be amazing until one is.
You don't expect anything to be amazing, actually. So.
That's true. That is how I go into everything.
You'll like it. I'm not saying you won't like this movie. You will like this movie. Just not going to be blown away by it. And that's okay. That's okay. In the grand scheme of things, when we look 20 movies from now, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. That was pretty cool how they set this up. It'll be a cool vital piece moving forward in the grand scheme of things. Just wasn't a great, you know, standalone movie.
I bet that was on a banner inside the studios. Like, let's make this not blow people away.
They probably wasn't. That's like, all right, we're gonna
we
send half
deal with
these
the
people
lawsuits
to Wakanda
anymore.
Forever. We're gonna send half these people to Wakanda forever instead of this one. which is crazy to me because the whole quantum realm was CGI. So why would you take people away from that?
I know, right?
I don't know. But anyway, Joe, what did you do this week in Disney?
I just watched Wakanda Forever, which we kind of talked about.
Right,
and I played Marvel Snap.
We're getting a new season of Marvel Snap in a week already.
In a week?
No, we're not.
Gosh.
Yeah, the season ends in a week.
Yeah, man.
It does not. We have two more weeks.
Joe, it's 1 week and 5 days.
Okay.
So it's basically 2 weeks. So we get a new season in 2 weeks. Where do you know what it is because of all these crazy data miners?
Which one? What is it?
Hitmonkeys and two ones. This one is. I forget. It's been that long since I've read into it because I'm now looking at the one in April.
Yeah.
we were going through the April one last time I checked. I forget what this next one is.
Mm-hmm.
Good talk. So Marvel Snap, we've all been playing a lot of Marvel Snap. The season's a good one. I like I think it's a little tougher this season.
I think it's definitely, but usually it gets a little easier towards the end of the season.
We'll see. I hope so. I need to climb.
Well, that's usually what happens. And because I feel like a lot of people who are already, that are doing really, they made their mark, like they're at 100, they stop playing. So that leaves the room for all the people who are not good like me on there. So that gives me a better chance to climb. But I've been playing that Endymion Zola deck.
Yes. Great
that's
deck.
That's my main deck I've been playing. Yeah. That's
great
my main
deck. I unlocked Galactus. So I've been using Galactus.
Oh, yeah. Today, right? Or yesterday you did it?
I've turned it into one of those people.
Is it working for you?
Yeah, it is. As long as you get the right cards. I feel like as long as you get the right cards, any deck works for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's a great thing about Marvel Snap. If you get the right cards, utilize the locations, and you predict what your opponent's going to do successfully, any deck can defeat any other deck.
Yes,
100%. Which I think is great. Unlike you guys, I don't have these amazing cards, so I am now utilizing the Sandman buff with Arrow.
Arrow. I watched that video today, Alex.
Oh yeah, the Sandman Arrow combination is what I'm utilizing right now.
Yeah, Alex sent me a video by Cozy. Cozy Snap on YouTube. Check him out if you like Marvel Snap. He also has a podcast. Interesting. But Alex told me about a video and I watched that. There was a patch to balance cards the other day. So a lot of cards got changes. In our chat, Ryan said he's doing a Death Deadpool deck. Alex just got Deadpool.
Yes, I did.
Yesterday, which is awesome. He got the new coin pack.
Yep.
And I am actually using Death. I haven't used Death in a little bit, but now I'm using Death and Null again with Galactus, which is fun.
That's the kind of thing that they need to fix the matchmaking, because people will be like, what do I do? What do I do with this? What do I do when I come against a Galactus, Null, and Death when my best card is Double Dinosaur?
So there's this thing in the bottom left that says Retreat. That's the best. That's the best card to play. Like that.
Well, it's too late at that point. It's like turn 5, 6 already. You snapped on turn 2.
Yeah. But again, if you guys don't know what you're talking about, you're interested in it. It's Marvel Snap. It's a mobile game. About Marvel. It's a card game. Very fun if you're into card games.
Speaking of Marvel Snap, I did watch a little bit of Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur cartoon that came out.
Me and Alex probably watched about the same amount, a little bit of the first episode.
Yeah, right?
It's awesome.
It's a little slow. I can't wait to get into like the middle of the season. Like the first episode's of course setting it up.
Of course, yeah.
And my kids unfortunately have no interest in it.
Oh.
Yeah.
I like the message it sends. I like how it takes place after an African American family.
Uh-huh.
I like how it takes place after like a family that has their own business. I think that's cool. Follow your dreams. You follow like a super super smart little girl, which is really cool because she's like, I don't know, and I think it's gonna be just like Black Panther was really cool because we finally got like the first black superhero. I think this show can do a lot for kids, not only that are African American, but that are just like, this girl's a little genius. So it's like, oh, you know, I can be a superhero because I'm smart, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
as long as you have a prehistoric devil dinosaur to help you.
Right, and a time portal to get that dinosaur. Yes. Yeah, it's cool though. I love the animation. That's what stood out to me the most.
It's interesting. I call it the
animation style. Yeah, it's very cool.
Next week on Diz His, we're gonna be doing a game show episode for March. And we'll follow that with Niels Wants to Know, a fan favorite segment.
A host favorite segment, too. I love that segment.
Yeah, it's a good segment. It's fun. I love hearing from Niels. So that's the His on Floyd Norman. I'm Joe.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Chris.
Thanks for listening and have a magical week. Please follow us on all social media by searching DizHiz65. Share us and subscribe to our podcast to get the latest show when it is available. If you want to help us out, get tips, get your memories shared on the podcast, see pictures and videos of what we are up to at the parks, join our goof troop on patreon.com and search for DizHiz.
Attention shoppers, we now have taste in the bread aisle. Dave's Killer Bread. That's right, an organic bread that's no longer a sedative for your taste buds. Dave's Killer Bread is on a mission to make the most of the loaf, to rid the world of GMOs, high fructose corn syrup, and artificial ingredients, and plant the seeds of good in all that they bake. Killer taste, killer texture, and always organic. Dave's Killer Bread. Bread amplified.